Welcome to Leave Your Mark, where I explore the influences that have shaped the lives of our incredible guests. These are the stories of lives worth talking about. Follow me on Twitter at Built by Scott and Instagram at King O'Payne, or link up with me on my Facebook fan page at Scott G. Livingston. My goal is to create a community of people who take every opportunity to live high-performing lives. Before I get started on today's podcast, I want to take a moment to connect you with my sponsor, ReconditioningHQ.com. Reconditioning is a method and language of integrated practice. It brings the worlds of therapy and conditioning together and helps them become more powerful and more practical. If you live in one or both of these worlds, or you use the services of a therapist or conditioning coach, you know that sometimes they don't see eye to eye. They aren't on the same page. Reconditioning provides a time-tested process for aligning these two worlds and creating impactful solutions to performance problems. Follow them at Reconditioning HQ on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or become a member of their Facebook group, Reconditioning HQ Revolution, and join the Reconditioning Revolution. I want to take a minute to connect you to our newest sponsor, Zenkai Sports, who are here with a question for you. Why do we sweat? Our body is perfectly designed to cool us down, but most apparel companies use moisture-wicking fabrics that remove our sweat, which makes us overheat faster and actually hurts our performance. Zenkai uses cutting-edge technology that repels sweat and other liquids. Zenkai apparel lets the sweat stay on your skin, keeping you cool for longer and repelling odor-causing bacteria. This means Zenkai apparel can be worn 10, 15, 20 times with no washing required. This lowers your carbon footprint and saves money, so you can be a hero with your planet and your family. Join the revolution for better apparel technology. What's in your ZNA? We've partnered with Zenkai, so if you head over to www.zenkaisports.com and use the discount code LYM20, you'll get 20% off your entire order. Hello and welcome to Leave Your Mark. I'm Scott Livingston, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Anthony Renna. Anthony has been a personal trader for the past 15 years. He began his career working with Equinox, then on his own at different facilities before opening his own gym, Five Iron Fitness, in 2008. He sold Five Iron in 2016 so he could focus on his true passion of providing educational resources for fitness professionals to excel in the profession. His mission is to help them find success and make an impact in the world by sharing all he has learned from the best of the best. As the founder and host of both the Strength Coach podcast and Strength Coach TV, he's interviewed hundreds of strength coaches, fitness professionals, physical therapists, and gym owners. He applies what he learned by helping fitness professionals in his personal coaching and accountability group. Anthony still trains clients a few hours a week and is partner with Mike Boyle in strengthcoach.com and Body by Boyle online. He recently published his new book, Be Like the Best, A Guide to Reaching the Top in Fitness Profession. I'm happy to have Anthony on the other side of the microphone today. Welcome, Anthony.
Scott, thanks so much. I'm excited. It's great to be on this show with so many. You've had so many amazing people on here, and it was an honor to get invited. Thank you.
Well, it's a little bit different than the performance type podcast. I really like to get into the life of the people who are on the other side of the microphone and understand where people come from. And in that light, you know, where did you grow up and sort of what did you dream of being when you were a little boy?
I grew up in White Plains, New York, which is about 30 miles north of Manhattan. And believe it or not, from talking to a Canadian, hockey was my passion as a kid. I just absolutely, if it was street hockey, ice hockey, NHL, I used to listen. I'll be 53 in March. So when I was a kid in the 70s, I was an Islander fan. I still am. And I had to listen to all the home games on the radio because they didn't show the home games on TV. You know, you only had like the 13 channels, right? And so I would sit upstairs and listen to the game. And it shaped a lot of kind of how I like to, I love listening. It's probably why the podcast was such a good thing for me, because I like to talk to people. I like to listen. I love that piece of it. I grew up kind of thinking I want to be a hockey player, but you know, look, back then we didn't have, we had like two rinks in our whole county. So I ended up playing street hockey and roller hockey probably more. I became a skate guard, you know, like anything I could do to be on the ice. I absolutely loved just playing hockey. So,
I worked for the Rangers and they had their practice facility in Rye. So how come you were an Islanders fan living in White Plains and not a Rangers fan? How'd that happen?
There you go. That's funny. Cause I skated at that rink plenty of times when I was a kid. I used to go we used to do 11:30 on Tuesday nights. The custodians from my school used to pick me up and we used to go play. I used to probably pick up hockey there. So what happened is, it's funny. How do you like a team? You like them most likely because of your parents or an older brother, right? Mm-hmm. So my family wasn't into hockey. And so I had there wasn't any Islander or Ranger paraphernalia around. Nobody was watching the game. But when it came to like the Giants or the Yankees, yes, that was around. But for me, my Aunt Louise, she went to an Islanders Flyers playoff game in 75. And she came home with an Islander pennant for me because she knew I played street hockey and stuff. And that's how I picked the Islanders, really, to be honest with you. It was just from that pennant from my Aunt Louise. So she got me
absolutely
going.
Absolutely.
And I became obsessed with it.
I'm sure you have, but did you ever get over to the island to Nassau County and watch a game in live? And
yeah, I saw in the 5 years that they won, 4 years that they won the cups, I was at 49 of those playoff games. We had season tickets. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That became such a focus for me. And my dad got I got my dad into hockey and he ended up getting season tickets in 1979. And I was there when Bobby Nystrom scored the overtime goal.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I went to all those games and my dad lives in Florida now. And it was kind of cool. I was able to take him to the Tampa Bay Lightning Chicago Stanley Cup game a couple of years back to kind of try to repay. But yeah, it was pretty cool. I remember going to an Islander playoff game a couple of years ago, Nassau Coliseum, and just taking pictures, I'm not kidding, of the hot dogs. Cause my dad and I used to get two hot dogs every time. Like we used to get there an hour early. He used to go watch the practice. This was at a time when you could stand on the seat and I would literally be hanging over the plexiglass. I know you remember the plexiglass being much shorter, right? Mm-hmm. And so I would watch practice, the warmups, and try to get a puck. And so I took pictures of everything at that playoff game, took video, I sent it to him. What used to happen was when we left the Nassau Coliseum after an Islander win, everybody would be – and they won all the time at the Coliseum. Everybody would be beeping their horn. So it would be like, dan, 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 dan. And so like the whole time. And so I literally, as I'm driving out of Nassau Coliseum, I'm videotaping. And I got the horn thing going. I sent it down to my dad. So, yeah, we went to so many games. It was crazy.
Oh, that's awesome. I actually met Brian Trottier the other day. He was in Pittsburgh for a game and bumped into him for the first time in my life. So yeah, a legend in his own time, so to speak.
Oh, he's one of my favorites. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's cool. So how did sports play or impact you growing up? Other than being a fan, were you a player of sports and how did they influence your life growing up?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, first of all, our generation, we were playing every sport unorganized all the time. I got home from school. Mostly for me, it was hockey. I'd say 75% of the time because I would come home. I had the two nets and everybody would kind of come over to my house or we'd go up to the school and we'd bring the nets. But we played football during, you know, the fall. And we played baseball in the spring and summer as well, right? Football wasn't only, we played kill the guy with the ball, you know, like, so it was just basically whoever had the ball, everybody else was trying to tackle him. we played, so everything was unorganized. And so I did a lot of that. Hockey was really the main organized sport for me. And golf as well, because I started caddying when I was 12 years old. So I started to play golf a little bit. Nothing crazy, just, you know, you just did it because you had access to it. So playing sports for me was, you know, I really felt like I learned a lot. I was able to meet so many great people in kids I played with. I still talk to kids that I played with. They used to sleep over my house like all weekend. My buddy Freddie Maudsley would come over Friday. We would go to this practice on Friday night. There was a public session from 8:30 to 11. We would skate at that. My parents would pick us up. He would sleep over. We would wake up, play some street hockey, go to a public session, hang out, play some more street hockey, have a game on Saturday nights. Then we would go to the public session. Then we would wake up late on Sunday and like go to the 2:30 to 5 public session. So, but that was, so I still talk to Freddie. I still have all of these people that were in my life and that were part of it. And I still go to games. And so for me, that was such a, it was such a great way to connect with so many people and to learn how to work with other people too. Cool. Right. That's what team sports does.
What was the influence of your parents in your life? I mean, obviously our parents have a big influence in many ways, but what did, were they more about, you know, school first, play second, play, enjoy? Did they emphasize things to you or did you just find your way as you went?
You know, I think it was more of their example. What my dad had his own business from the start. So for me, I always wanted to do my own thing. And I always looked at, it was always, you know, I was in the restaurant and bar business for 18 years. So even as a young kid, even in my teens, I thought, I knew I was going to, I'm going to open my own business. And then I thought it would be a bar or restaurant because that's what I got into at that time. But I always wanted to open my own place. And that was a huge influence on my dad. And then my mom's influence, my mom is somebody that doesn't really have a filter, let's say, let's be polite about it. And so I definitely have a little bit of that when I'm talking to people sometimes, not in a podcast or whatever, but you know, in person. There's that element of between the entrepreneurship that my dad had and doing his own thing and my mother's kind of just that no filter, say what's on your mind type of thing. That really kind of shaped me as an adult. I really feel there were so many things that, and I see that now, you know, you always think I'm not going to be like that or I won't be like that. But then you kind of turn into your parents a little bit, you know?
So. Well, that must've been really empowering though, in some sense, if you went into the food and bar industry in terms of connecting with people and making people feel comfortable when they came into your space. I mean, what was your attraction to opening a restaurant and a bar or being a part of that? Okay, a short break here to tell you about our sponsor, ReconditioningHQ.com. Reconditioning is for treatment skills and protocols and training methods and exercises, like an operating system on a smartphone is for applications. Fundamentally, reconditioning brings the worlds of therapy and performance preparation together in one systematic process that makes treatment and training systems more efficient and effective. Level 1 takes you through the fundamental assessment process and gives you a tactical approach to eliminate any issue that stands in the way of your client's progress towards quality movement and a healthy and high-performing state. Level 2 goes deep on context, analyzing and understanding variable movement patterns, gaining clarity on key movement attributes, and being exceptionally precise about your interventions and strategies. It then links to the overall preparation program and becomes deeply considered of the context of that program and the environments of preparation. Finally, our Reconditioning Specialist Mentorship is a completely virtual experience you can engage in from the comfort of your home that allows you to benefit from our 50 years of professional practice in a high-quality community of practitioners. This 8-week program walks you through how to apply this powerful operating system in your environment and your circumstances, irons out all the question marks, and ensures you are ready to deliver the most effective reconditioning practice to your clients. Head over to reconditioninghq.com to see what our next courses are being held and when our next mentorship is starting. Join the reconditioning revolution.
For me, I really understood. I was able to kind of read people a little bit better. I was able to kind of feel people out. I was able to kind of sit back and understand that I had to listen first, that it wasn't, everything wasn't always what it appeared, especially once you got a little bit later into the night, you know, because then there was some alcohol involved, certainly, that people were. So you had to kind of navigate through that. So that was a big thing that I think the restaurant business taught me. But just being around a lot of people was something that for me, and I guess if they had been diagnosing ADHD in the 70s, maybe I would have gotten that. But I like to say, I just like to move. I think that's what attracted me to hockey, right? I love skating. I love bike riding. I love hiking. I'm always, always on the move. And I think in a bar, in a restaurant, there's so much activity, there's so much movement in and out that it really resonated with me. So I think that was part of what happened. And that's part of why I think the fitness business resonated with me as well.
It's a tough industry though. When you speak to most people who are in it, like it doesn't kind of end. You're always constantly connected to it somehow. And especially if you're on the bar side, the nights are late, et cetera. Did that have a toll on you over time? And was that sort of the reason you got out of it, or what are different reasons?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the reasons, it does take its toll. That kind of getting home at 6 or 7 in the morning. Mm. It's a young man's business for sure. Right. You're constantly around that and you need, you know, you get tired of it. Mm. But also for me, what was going on, and this is part of what happened with me going into the fitness business, was I really was drifting, and I kind of wasn't really, I was in my 30s and I felt like, what am I doing? Mm. What am I really doing? That question started to come up. So I'm all right. I'm getting people drunk. That's really essentially what I was boiling it down to. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let's say you came in, you had your 80th birthday party at the bar or restaurant, and there was a great family event, and everybody was like, oh, thank you so much. This was such a great event. All right. You know, that was great. But was I really doing anything? And I felt like that wasn't enough for me. And you know what I really loved was I worked for a bar chain. And what would happen is when they had new managers come in, they would send that manager, the new manager, to me, and they would trail me for 2 weeks. And I realized I love that because I got something out of that. I felt like I was helping this person develop a career to kind of get in there. Because in the bar business too, you have to remember, we had these young ladies working 3 nights a week in New York City, probably making, you know, $1,500 a week cash. Okay. Mm. 3 nights a week. And here I have managers who are making $40,000 a year. So let's $1,500 a week is roughly $75,000 to $80,000 a year, right? Mm-hmm. But here's a manager now who's supposed to be, you know, in charge making $40,000, right? So mm-hmm. I had to navigate that. Hey, listen, you have insurance. Your night isn't dependent upon the weather or how many people are in the hotel or. And we had to teach these, and you're learning a skill, right? So I had to work through that and to teach them, this is what you want. And I didn't even realize it at the time, how much I was drifting and how I was really clinging to these new managers coming to the bar. Mm. And that's where I think, again, when I play Monday morning quarterback and I look and I think, wow, this is the path that led me to where I am right now, because I absolutely love that part of it, teaching and talking about the industry and what they wanted to do. And here I am kind of drifting myself at the time. Mm-hmm. And then once I got into the fitness business, I started to dial that in. So that was really the big factor. It was, I didn't have a mission or purpose, but I look back now.
So talk about that for a second. What's the ignition switch that makes you go from that lifestyle to all of a sudden fitness, and what brings you into that? Is there an instigator, or how do you find it?
I think it was more of a tipping point. There was a few things. Like I said, number one, I felt like, okay, I'm drifting. What am I really doing? When I was starting to ask that question about my purpose. And there was the other factor, like you talked about earlier, you know, look, it's a late night. Was it something that I even wanted to do physically, even if I loved it? It was hard on your body. There were other things that I wanted to do. I was an active person. So it's hard to do, you know, get 5 or 6 hours of sleep, because automatically I would wake up at 11 anyway, mm-hmm. right? Even if I went to bed at 7, I would wake up at 11. And you're tired, and that stuff catches up to you over time. So I think that was a huge part of it. So my wife got me a personal trainer as a Christmas gift. And it just, again, that tipping point idea, I started to ask him questions because I'm kind of question boy. And I was like, hey, you know, do you like this? And tell me about your day. And are you making any money? And what's cool about it? What sucks about it? And we, you know, over this 10, I mean, she got me a 10 pack. So over this 10 pack, I just kind of, I started to think this might be a good thing for me. I just started observing the gym and I'm thinking this is like a bar. There's a lot of people around. They're shifting around. There's a lot of movement. I, you know, like we talked about, I grew up playing a bunch of sports. I grew up like trying to do everything. I worked in Yellowstone for a couple seasons. I worked at a ski resort in Lake Tahoe. I was a bicycle messenger in LA, mm-hmm. Portland, Oregon. So there was always this idea of this movement, moving mm-hmm. around. And so I just knew I had to, you know, why not try this? Why not get certified? What's the worst that can happen? I'm already working out. I like to work out. I'll learn how to work out better. So I did it and I just fell in love with this idea that I'll never know all there is to know, and, you know, in this business, right? Because I was cocky in the bar business. I'm like, you know, when I was a bartender, I was like, come on, this is, I could open a bar. And then I became a manager and I was like, all right, I didn't know everything, but now I know everything, right? Because I'm a manager. But then I became a general manager and I said, woo, man, I thought I knew everything, but you know what? Until I was a general manager, now I know everything. Then they asked me to open a bar that was only concrete and wires at the time. There wasn't even anything there. And I got beat up. I was like, wow, you know, I'm never saying that again, you know? And I opened up a couple more bars for people, you know, for other people after that. And it was one of those things where I just learned to realize, look, this is something that you're never going to completely know everything that's going to happen, but you can just prepare. It's almost like man's search for meaning, right? You can control what's going on in your brain and react, how you react to it. So it's very similar. That was my epiphany in the bar business. Like, things are going to go wrong. The ice machine does not go out on a Monday at 11 o'clock in the morning. It goes out at Friday at 11 o'clock at night. So instead of freaking out about it, what was the first thing I did when I opened up this bar in the meatpacking district in New York? I made friends with a couple of the bars on each side. Hey guys, whatever you ever need, you need my guys to come over. You need this, you need that. Hey, I'm here for you. Because when the ice machine went out, I went next door and got some ice, right? Yeah. So you learn to deal with things. And that's really, it's how you react to things that really makes a difference in how you're going to be able to be successful at something sometimes.
What is it about your personality? Is this something that you inherently have or that you've developed where you would feel, because I want to unpack this guy kind of changing your career mid stance mm-hmm. kind of thing. You're mid 30s, you're a little bit disillusioned with where you're headed, what you're doing. And then you pick a new profession that has, as you just described, this massive inclination of knowledge that you have to sort of accumulate to be good at, so to speak. Unpack that, because there's a lot of people who are starting the industry in their 20s and they're challenged by how they're going to create a career. How do you go about just injecting yourself midlife, sort of in the midlife crisis phase, so to speak, into something that daunting and sort of feel comfortable with it?
I think one of my favorite, and it turned out to be one of my core values when I decided to, you know, sit down and do my core values. One of my favorite quotes was, always run your own race. Mm. And, you know, from a perspective of being in the sports performance industry, how important that is. Because if you run a race, if you run an actual 5K race, like I did one year, and I was running at a, you know, training at like an 8 or 8.5 minute mile. I wasn't a runner, but I just wanted to do it. But then when that gun went off, that first mile, I did like a 7:30, and that wasn't good. Right. Cause my training was at 8.5 minute mile. And so I burned myself out. Right. So that really rings true in terms of business, in terms of career development with me too. I think I really understood run your own race. It was really important for me to say, don't worry about those guys. And I used to call it the Gray Cook effect, because when I used to see Gray speak, I used to think, what am I doing? Why am I in this business, right? Early on, my 1 year, 2 year in the business. And I thought, this guy is roughly my age, maybe he's a year older. What am I doing? I'm never going to get, this guy has 20, 15 years experience on me. Plus he's super smart, right? But I'm like, I'm never going to be the best at this. How can I do this, right? And then I would calm down and say, no, just relax. Run your own race. So I focused on my own education. I always had a book in my hand, right? Focus on what you can control. I can control my own education. I went to every workshop, mentorship. I went to work. I saw Gray Cook before I was in the fitness industry. I got certified and I would always go on PT on the net, and he was coming up with Peter Twist. Him and Peter Twist were coming to the Jewish Community Center in New York City on Amsterdam Avenue. And I went to go see them, and I was still in the bar business. I was still running a bar, and I'm going to see Gray Cook. So I kept focusing on what can I do to just make myself better, keep working on myself. I went to, Mark Verstegen's mentorship, the athletes' performance mentorships. I went to Mike Boyle's stuff whenever I could, pretty much everything of Mike's. And whenever I could do that, any summit, any workshop, I was at every single one. So that was the main thing that I focused on, running my own race. Because when you start to let those external factors come in and you're worried about everybody else, and it's much harder to do now because of social media. You look on social media and you go down this rabbit hole and you're thinking, oh, Scott's podcast is so much better than mine. Everybody's sharing his stuff. Why aren't they sharing mine? You know, whatever. Like, you can start to get, you can get depressed about that. So for me, it's like always kind of going back to this idea about running your own race. And I guess we could even say it's a little bit of the why thing, right? What is your why? Going back to your why of why you're doing it. I wouldn't say I did that early on. It was always me just saying, relax, you're a smart guy. Just keep learning. Go to these guys, learn, network with them, right? You can't beat them, join them. So that was my kind of approach to all of this.
Let's go into that for a second. You talk about coming back to your why. So you take this leap of faith that you're attracted to the fitness industry because of your interaction with this guy. You decide you're going to start to do this. What do you fall in love with in the process of getting into it?
I really think it was part of it was the, I'm never going to know all that there is to know. And I said, you're always going to be challenged with this. You're always going to have something to learn. And again, not that I felt like I knew everything in the bar business, because I certainly didn't. I could have gone on to become working from a corporate perspective and learned all that stuff. But that didn't really interest me. You could do that with any business. You can open a UPS store or whatever, and you'll learn that piece of it too. But for me, this was something that I was going to be helping people. I was always going to be challenged. That was a big part. I get bored really easy going back to this whole, I have to keep moving idea, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's where a lot of this resonated with me was that, look, you're always going to be able to keep learning. You're never going to know, you're never going to be a doctor, right? That wasn't something I was looking to be, but there's always going to be somebody out there who's going to know more. And this is going to be so interesting for forever. And also it's going to help my own personal health. Plus I'm going to be helping people, which is what I was looking for, which was missing really in my life.
That's cool. Well, you are born March 18th, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So this is a piece of my podcast that I always do. I have this book called The Day You Were Born, written by a New York lady named Linda Joyce, who was an astrologer and numerologist who brought those two worlds together. I discovered my purpose in the book. It was quite profound. But so I always read everybody's purpose to them. So you are Pisces 9. and your purpose is to jump into life and live it to the utmost, manifesting a dream and never forgetting that what you do and how you do it will be an example to others. We should consider every day lost in which we have not danced at least once. Friedrich Wilhelm Nitschke. The Pisces 9 has a passion for life. They are here to live and love, and no one or nothing should stand in their way. Their true challenge is found in how they conduct themselves, face their challenges, and treat others who have less courage. They must balance a strong ego and a tendency towards selfishness with the desire to give and serve. Pisces 9 must throw their whole beings into whatever they do. People are attracted to their beauty and charm. They are psychic and intuitive. They can be shy. Without a purpose or a sense of self, others could overwhelm them. With a purpose, they must be careful not to misuse their powerful will to dominate others. Pisces 9s can be narcissistic and demanding. They struggle with anger and need to channel it creatively. Obsession is not a distant stranger. They must work on inner discipline, practice patience, and use their brilliant minds for a great purpose.
All right.
Interesting. Well, I like the way that started out, especially because it sounded very much like the guy I'm listening to across from the microphone.
I like that. It said something about charming. I thought that was
So what makes you believe that you can open a business after being in the business? So now you decide you're going to build your own gym. Where does that come from inside of you and why?
Yeah, again, I think it goes back to this inner desire of this entrepreneurship, right? Mm. That my father's influence on, you know, calling the own shots. And, you know, I am kind of a know-it-all, right? And I think in order to be an entrepreneur, you have to be a little bit of a know-it-all. Certainly some of the stuff you read in there was like, it rings true. Mm. And I do want to follow my own path. I do want to leave my mark, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was one way that I thought I could do that. I saw what my father was doing, and I felt like that's where I was going. So really for me, but at the same time, I'm pretty practical, but I'm also not afraid to do things, to take action on a lot of different things. So really, again, going back to this idea about the tipping point, like things are starting to, or a perfect storm are starting to. So I have a bunch of clients. I'm training them either at my house, I'm going to their house, et cetera. I think what I have a good idea in its infancy, right? Golf fitness is really in 2008 is really in its infancy. Titleist Performance Institute comes up with their first summit in 2006, their first certification in 2007. So I grew up caddying. I had some connections. Mm. To the golf industry. I had a little bit of a story. I also caddied for a local pro, and I caddied in the US Open and a couple of these other big events. So I knew, like, okay, I got a little mini story here too from a marketing perspective. Mm-hmm. So those were all the things that were kind of moving towards me to say, and a new place had opened up that was just golf performance, and they had some room in the back. So there's got to be a little bit of luck and timing as well. So for me, I was like, you know, look, what is this really gonna cost me? I'm spending money on gas, going to people's homes. I would rent out this physical therapy clinic and give him some money every month. Kind of thought about it. The rent for this golf performance place was pretty cheap. So I thought, all the stars are aligned. I have X amount of clients. I'm not going to be paying that much in rent. It's something that I always wanted to do. I wanted to call my own shot. So things kind of all lined up for me to say, yeah, it's time to open up. And I did think it was a good idea. I thought Five Iron Fitness would be a good idea. It's new. I have these connections because it's not only important to know who you are in your business and to know what your demographic is. That's all great. And is there a need for it? I felt all those things were there, but can you reach your demographic? Mm. That is a question I think we don't ask enough when we're opening things or going into a new venture. Great, you know who your demographic is, but are you connected to them? Can you reach them? I knew a bunch of golf pros in my local area, right in my area, from not only from caddying, but from a few other things. So I thought, you know, this is the time. The time is right to do this. And I felt like, okay, I'm ready to do it. That's why I opened 5-Iron.
So what did you discover in that process that you didn't understand before that was challenging for you?
You know, you can read and learn all you want about things, and you can talk a big game. And I certainly talked a big game about kind of dreaming bigger, right? So I'm dreaming big. I'm going to have a facility, and I'm going to connect with the local golf clubs, and I'm going to put, you know, trainers in those golf clubs because they have gyms as well a lot of times. But I really didn't execute on it. And one of the biggest things that I learned was you can have the knowledge. You can be an action taker. I opened my gym. I was doing things. I was marketing, but I wasn't executing big enough. So if you had to ask me what I would tell my younger self, that question, even as a little about 2 months ago, I would have said, dream bigger. And I've been saying that on some podcasts. It's no longer dream bigger. It's execute bigger, because I had some great ideas and I had some, what I thought were amazing ideas. I could impact a lot of people. I could make a lot of money. I could help so many people, but I didn't execute bigger. And to me, if I had to go back and do it again, I would execute it bigger. And so number one, like, let's just give a few examples, would be working on your business as opposed to in your business, right? That's what everybody talks about with opening a business. It's the e-myth. Mm-hmm. I can say that all I want. I can do all these things. But until you say, no, I am hiring 2 people. I'm making that commitment. I'm going to have an assistant. I'm going to do all these things. And I'm going to go out there and I'm going to make sure I'm the face of the business, and I'm going to keep marketing. I didn't do that. I kept saying, yeah, I'm going to work on my business. And I did the things that I was supposed to do. And I made a room for group fitness, and I moved to semi-private. And Scott, I didn't even have my name on my business card. It was just 5-Iron Fitness. I didn't want to make it about me. So I was doing those right things, but I really didn't execute it as big as I should have. I had so many great ideas in marketing. I'll give you one. So every golf tournament or golf outing has a long drive contest, right? And anybody can steal this idea. I don't care. So so if you're a golf trainer, steal this idea. It's a great idea. So now the golf pro has to give away prizes. And what they want to do is get you in the golf shop, et cetera. So normally if you win a long drive contest, what do you think you're going to win? You're going to win a driver, okay? So I thought, okay, that's great. But what about second place and third place, right? So here's a win-win for everybody. I'm going to come up with the prize for 5-Iron Fitness. So I'm going to give you this prize, Golf Pro. You don't have to pay for it, because a lot of times they'll be like, okay, second place is a $25 gift certificate to the pro shop. That comes out of their pocket. So this is not coming out of their pocket. So I thought, I made up these cards for second and third place. I said, great job. You came in second place in the long drive competition. Looks like you need a little help. Here is a little, it was like a mini pack. It's like a free assessment and a session to 5-Iron Fitness, because if you get in shape, you know, like, we're going to help you hit the ball longer, blah, blah, blah. And I did it for second and third place because I thought, cool, I'm not giving the first place prize. I'm giving it to the guys, the consolation prizes, because they're the ones who need help, right? That was a great idea. But I didn't do – I should have made those cards. I should have given every golf pro, let's say the 10 clubs in the local area, I should have been over there. I should have been asking them, what dates are those tournaments? I'm going to come over. I'm going to warm everybody up. I should have went crazy with it. I should have executed it a lot bigger. So that's really an example that you have to execute big. Don't just dream big, execute big.
Wow. That's an interesting, you know, I want to dig into that a little bit, because I think it's something that people who get into the fitness industry slash then the next derivative is, well, I'm a solopreneur now. Now I'm going to become an entrepreneur. I'm going to own a business. And it's kind of like okay, that's the next extension. But what people don't recognize is you also have to have that in your, like inside your soul as well. There's the things that attracted you to the business, which were helping somebody solve a problem, making them fitter, et cetera, et cetera. Now you're switching gears into something that you just described, which is overcoming the fear of going to, you know, some event and not knowing people and expressing what you've got to offer to them and stuff, which are sales practices, extroverted practices, et cetera, et cetera. Talk about that a little bit, because I think this is a misunderstanding of a lot of people who decide to take that leap of faith to move to that next level. They don't understand what they're actually getting themselves into.
They don't. And I think one of my favorite quotes in regards to this, go back to the restaurant business, just because you know how to cook doesn't mean you should open a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's just a small piece of it. And because we're trainers and we know what we can do and we can connect with people, doesn't mean we're going to be good marketing people. So can we get people in the door, right? And that takes a lot of work. It really does. It's not just get some Facebook ads, because those run out after a while too. It has to be this constant flow of leads, because you're always going to have some attrition. People are always going to leave. Are you going to be good at sales? So once we get them in the door, can you sell them on what you have? And then what I really think is a huge missing piece in a lot of these things right now is retention. Can you keep them in there? How do you keep them in there? You keep them in there by results. You keep them in there by focusing on them. These are all things that, you know, you might be good at one, but you better be good at the other two as mm-hmm. well. But mm-hmm. I think that comes down to delegating. Going back to what I talked about with the E-Myth idea was, you have to remove yourself. You have to understand, what are you good at? John Berardi talks in his new book, right? What are your unique abilities? And then figure out what are those things that you can delegate and have the courage to delegate them, because we do, being a know-it-all, I know that I think, well, no one's going to do this as good as I can. And I'm good at marketing and I'm good at this and no one can sell this place like me and no one can train like me. And then you go on vacation, you let somebody else do it and you're like, wait a minute, the place didn't fall apart. You know? That's the greatest thing. I saw Michael Gerber speak, and Michael Gerber, who wrote the E-Myth, he said, the best thing you can do for your business is to get an office 6 blocks away from it, right? So you're not there. And we have this idea, and that was kind of the hard part of closing the gym or selling the gym, was, that's my identity. Or, you know, people are going to think I failed, or what else am I going to do? Or, you know, obviously I already had the podcast and Shrinkles.com and this whole thing moving in this direction. It wasn't like a complete leap of faith for me, but it really was something where you have to have the courage to release that. And you know, again, that's where that E-Myth idea comes in. But you have to go into it knowing what you're good at and what maybe you're not good at.
Mm-hmm. How old were you when you got married?
I got married I was 35.
So is this around the time you're making that transition or
yeah.
after? Yeah.
Yeah. So I got married when I was 35, but my wife and I met at 31. So it was, you know, when you're, it was kind of like we were married anyway, you know, year two, three, four, whatever. We got married in year 4 or 5. And then I think it wasn't such a big, oh my God, how can you do this? Because, yeah, she didn't like it either. Right. She didn't love this. We bought a house. So we were living in Manhattan while I was in the bar business. I got certified while I was still in Manhattan. And then we got married. 6 months later, we bought a house in Westchester. So we moved back to close to where we grew up. And so I was still working in the city and coming home. So never mind, I had to work till 6 and then I get home at 7. You know, it wasn't the greatest thing for my wife, because she had the opposite job. So Sundays she's like wants to hang out with me because, like you read about before, I'm very charming. So it helps. Wanted to be with me, right? So on Sundays. So
we digress here a little bit.
So that was a big fact. She was all for it. She wanted me to get the hell out of the bar business.
So it was a positive thing. That's great.
Yeah, totally.
Here again with another word from our sponsors, Zenkai Sports, who want to let you in on a little secret. Performance apparel hasn't changed much in the last 20 years. Most apparel is still based on moisture-wicking synthetics, which not only make you more overheat faster, but are toxic for your body and the environment. Synthetics don't biodegrade, so that stinky workout shirt you have to throw out after 6 months, it lasts for thousands of years in landfills. Zenkai is the only cotton-based training apparel on the market, keeping your body safe from those scary petroleum-based synthetics found in most workout gear and giving you that extra edge when it counts. Be a part of the solution and join the revolution for better apparel technology at www.zenkaisports.com. What's in your ZNA? For 20% off your entire order, please use the discount code LYM20.
So you build this business, you run this business for a while, and you're taking all these certifications. And, you know, in reading about you and then listening to you, and obviously you're on the podcast, you're a bit of a gadfly. You're banging into all these different people and you're connecting with them versus the average customer who actually takes the course and then kind of doesn't really get to know these people. So describe that. How do you start to get to know all these guys in the industry and get more connected to a guy like Mike Boyle and perform better and things versus just, you know, going about your business of educating yourself and going to your business each day?
Yeah, for me, it was that idea, right? 90% is Woody Allen quoted, right? 90% of success is showing up, right? So it was me really just showing up. I would go to these things and I would, you know, first, like I said, I'm question boy. So I always ask questions when I'm at a place, right? At a workshop, at a seminar. My hand's always up, right? And I'm going to make sure that I do whatever I can to meet that person. I always thank the person. I always wrote them an email. I always went up to them after the seminar. Also, I think my connection with Mike happened just from the perspective of he had an opening for Functional Strength Coach One. He was inviting 30 people to be you at the time. I think this is 2005, end of four, maybe five. Yeah. So he said he had two spots open and they said, hey, you know, email Mike Boyle if you want this last two spots. And I said, hey, Mike, what's up? I had just gotten back from Mark Verstegen's mentorship. I work at Equinox. I knew he knew who Equinox was. It was, you know, a popular gym in New York chain. And I said, I'd love to come. I have functional training for sports. I would love to come. Mike responded by saying, okay, Anthony, you're in. I remember you. You asked me a question. You sent me an email. I asked me a question. So when I went to perform better a couple weeks later, so Functional Strength Coach One was going to be 1 week after Perform Better. I went to Perform Better. I went right up to Mike. I said, hey, Mike, I'm Anthony Rana. You just approved me for Functional Strength Coach. And my buddy is Greg Cronin, who you worked with. And he knows Greg from working at Team USA.
I have to stop you for a second because I worked with Greg with the Islanders my first year in the NHL. So I know.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Greg. And what's funny is I know Greg and Lorne Henning and Butchie Goring through the bar business because I was in the bar and who asked me to go to the bathroom? Who asked me where the bathroom is? Lorne Henning. Now, who's going to know Lorne Henning in New York City? Nobody knows who he is, right? Except the kid that was at the game that he made the pass, you know, in center ice to John Tinelli. He made the pass to Bobby Nation. So I was like, hey, Lorne, what's up? How you doing? He's like, I'm here with Butchie and Greg Cronin. We're going to the Whiskey Blue. And I said, well, I'm the manager of the lobby bar. If you don't like that, come over, buy you guys a drink. 10 drinks later that I bought them, next thing you know. So, but that's the thing is like kind of engaging people. And Bill Parisi talks about it in my book a lot. And that's Bill is a master at this. It's like you have to engage. And I think that's the huge part about it. So like I engaged with Mike. I went up to everybody. I thanked them. I talked about how much I love their book or their videotape, right? Or their DVD. So I made it a point to kind of go up to those people and talk to them. And then I was a little bit older too, right? I was 37, 38 now. So it wasn't some 22-year-old kid who didn't have as much to say, maybe, or didn't have the life experience that I had, or didn't have some of these. I can maneuver around a conversation a little bit easier, right? And that was the bar business that was kind of taught me how to be able to do that. So that was the easy part for me.
That's awesome. So what becomes your attraction to this medium? Why do you decide to get into podcasting? I know Mike said to me, and I guess you'll tell me the true story or how it all went down, but he told me that you or somebody to the likes said to him that he should have a podcast. He didn't know what the heck it was and basically sort of took your advice and got into it. Now he recognized the value proposition of it, but that was you, I assume. And you were the instigator of that.
I was the instigator, which is, you know, my mom would call me that a lot, actually. So what happened is, you know, so I'm engaging, I'm making these, you know, I'm talking to Mike. Also, I would always go out after the workshops or seminars. So that's how I got to know a lot of people as well. Mm-hmm. But a really important lesson for everybody is the answer to every unasked question is no. So if you don't ask, the answer is no, right? So for me, what happened was I had a podcast called the Better Golf with Fitness podcast. This is late 2006, early 2007. And so I'm kind of getting, you know, I did like 20 episodes. I kind of knew my way around, you know, learning about podcasting. And so Mike at the time had a forum called michaelboyle.biz, and all the best guys were on it, right? All these top guys that are now top guys were all asking questions, and they had this great forum. And at the time, Sports Pacific was going downhill because the owner had now found something else to grab people's money for. So that was, he was letting that site just go to waste, and he was trying to sell it. Chris Parrier came up with this great idea, said, why don't you just let Mike take it over and give him half of it? So the guy agreed. And Mike announced on the forum, and he had said, listen, everybody, I am taking over sportspecific.com. It's going to be called strengthcoach.com. So we're going to move this forum over to that. Now, everybody raised, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this. Why would you, the guy's a marketer and he's not in the, you know, he's not really a fitness pro. We're strength coaches and we're knowledgeable. We're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And how could you charge $10 a month? Now, you know, I mean, ridiculous. Everybody's complaining. So much so that instead of giving everybody who was on michaelboyle.biz 3 months free to the new strengthcoach.com, he had to give everybody 6 months. I don't know if Michael remember, if he blocked it from his mind, but so for me, I was like more than happy. I'm like, I'll pay $10 a month to keep hanging with, you know, talking to Mike. Then, you know, we're already becoming friends. So I called him. I said, Mike, listen, I got a great way for you to promote your site, your new site. It's called a podcast. It's basically like a radio show for the internet. I didn't get into the details of, you know, they have to download it off of iTunes and put it on their iPad, iPod, whatever, like that. That one went over. And I said, listen, Mike, all you have to do is answer your cell phone twice a month. And we'll talk about the forum topics. We'll talk about articles. I'll get a strength coach on, right? Because I knew I had a good connection. I'd be like, Mike, can you ask this guy to be on my new show? So I called Chris Parrier, who I know you've had on the show, is the unbelievable guy. And I said, I actually drove up to Providence instead of just calling. I wanted to take him to lunch. I said, Chris, here's the idea. We'd love for you guys to be involved, because I knew I needed to make some money. You know that this is not just passive income, or, you know, you're not just doing this because you're making a boatload of money. It's hard. It's a lot of work. And so I said, Chris, this is, you know, I'd love for you to sponsor. We'll put you guys on the show. So he agreed to it right away. Boom, boom, boom. He might even pay for lunch, I think. That's the way Chris is. I talked to Mike about it. I go, Mike, you're not going to have to pay for it. I'll do all the work. You just have to answer the phone. We'll talk about your site. That's exactly what he said. And I don't know what a podcast is, but I trust you. Let's do it. And that was the start of it. By the way, October 25th was 12 years. So that was 12 wow. years ago. So Mike just had faith. And that's Mike. Hmm. It wasn't about a podcast. It wasn't about promoting his site. It was about doing something. He knew I wanted to do it and he trusted me. And he said, what's the worst? Like, I'm just going to talk about strength and conditioning for, 20 minutes. Great. Do it. Let's do it. So that's how it happened.
So I don't know if you can, it's a loaded question. I'm not even sure you can actually answer it in the time that we have together, but it'll be interesting to get a few points from you. You've interviewed obviously a lot of people in 12 years. What are some common human things about what you've experienced that you could sort of dial down to maybe we don't understand about the human condition, so to speak, about why people do what they do? Like, you're talking to people who are in strength, they're passionate, they love, the things that they're in. But what have you taken from these interviews that has impacted upon you about the industry, about the characters in the industry, and all that sort of stuff that people can take away?
Yeah, wow. That's a tough one. I mean, it's not tough from a general perspective. I think, like you said, they're so passionate. I think the guests that I've had really inspire me to want to do more, because I'm always just, even if you don't know somebody that well and you've seen, okay, there's a lot of talk about this guy and you get them on your show, and you just learn so much more about them. And I'm always so impressed at the background and until you talk to somebody. I love that Brene Brown quote. You can't hate somebody up close. Not that I was hating somebody, but when you learn more about that person, you're like, man, I can't even, I have that much more respect for that person. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you just a quick example. I've talked about this a little bit on maybe another show. Al Vermeil I was a little nervous. It's 2007. I know he's a legend. He doesn't know what a podcast is either, right? I mean, he's just going to take this phone call. I think it's episode 13 and 14. So I make arrangements with Al to get come on the show. And if you know Al Vermeil, he lives, eats, sleeps, breathes this stuff. This is what he loves to do. He loves to talk about it. So I get him on the phone. We talk about a bunch of stuff. We go 40, 45 minutes. And I'm walking the dog a couple hours later. It's a Saturday. And I get a call and I'm like, oh, Al's calling me. Maybe he butt dialed me or something, right? So I answer it and I said, hello, Al, how you doing? What's up? He said, Anthony, I wanna redo the podcast. And I thought, what do you mean? What happened? What's the matter? And he said, I don't think I answered the questions very, very well. And I thought, it was an amazing interview. I was great. No, I didn't. I said, okay, wait, hold on. What if we just do what if I come up with a couple more questions, and you can come up with a couple if you want. And we do a part two. How about that? Would that be okay? And he said, absolutely. When can we do it? I was like, how's Monday? He's like, all right, great. So we get on the phone Monday and we do. And it was the first time that I did this part, Al Vermeil, part one and part two. But it just showed me, here I am. I'm thinking this guy probably doesn't want to give me the time of day, right? Originally in my head, that's my voice is talking. That's my self-limiting belief. And here's this guy who just can't give me enough. And so I think I find that so much with this industry and these people that I interview and that I talk to and that I go to their gyms or whatever for Strength Coach TV or whatever, and Strength Coach and even Be Like the Best. I think two people didn't answer the email. And one was Mark Verstegen, by the way. I'm only saying that because I know, because Mark's answered me so many times from his spam box, right? And but I didn't pursue it because I have these other people. And so I didn't want to disparage Mark, but he just basically, my mail always ended up, and he got a billion emails. And Mike said, no, just I'll email him if you want. Just remind me. And I never did. I was like, it's okay. It's no big deal. I'll get him on the next one. But everybody answered right away. And like, there's so many, this industry, there's so many good people. Mike likes to say, sometimes we get hung up on these ideas of, and it's like, pepper on, or fly shit on pepper, right? It's so small. Like, we agree on 97% of the stuff, and then we focus on that 3%. And it's something that I learned from a business consultant, Dan Sullivan. He calls it the gap in the game. Mm. When we have a goal we want to achieve and we're working towards that goal, and let's say the 3 months is up that we allotted ourselves to reach that goal, and we got to 80%. What do we focus on? We focus on the gap. Well, I didn't reach my goal. I there's that little piece. I could have done this. I could have done that. Wait a minute. You just got 80% of your goal. That's the game, the gap in the game. So we focus on the gap. And I think it's very similar in this industry, is we have these little clicks and different sections, subsections, and this one doesn't like West Side, and this one doesn't like CrossFit, and you know, this one, well, that's actually Mike Boyle. It isn't like anybody else's stuff, right? But I'm actually talking about Mike. But we have all these things that people like, oh, you know, I watched the Game Changers, documentary yesterday. We have four people on our strengthcoach.com forum who there was a thread about it. Four people are answering. They haven't even seen it. Like this, like, what are we talking? Why are we doing? Watch it first. And maybe there's some good that, like, I'm trying to take the good out mm-hmm. of the Game Changers documentary. Mm-hmm. I think we don't do that enough. So, but that's really what I've seen, is I felt like they've inspired me to feel like I can do more. I can do more. And I'm happy to do it because we have so many amazing people that we're dealing with.
Through this process of change, from being the entrepreneur in the bar to the entrepreneur in the gym to now what you're doing now, what have you learned about yourself? Who have you become in essence, and how are you connected to that?
I think I really need to kind of set my schedule. I'm somebody that really needs a plan. Mm. I didn't realize it as much, because when you have a gym, or if you're a trainer who is working, let's say you're doing your 30 hours a week, your world is dictated by this, you know, 6 a.m. to 9 or 10, and then you have a little bit of a break, and then you have the 4 to 7 or whatever, the personal trainer split schedule type of thing, or whatever. Even if you don't have that, you have a schedule because people are coming in. You have, so you work around it. And so I didn't really think about how much I really needed to be on that track, because when you have a lot of time, all of a sudden, for me anyway, not you, I need to dial myself in. That's where, I started to get some other coaching from a guy named Michael Hyatt. And I started to realize, wow, yeah, I need to work. I need to fill out my planner at the end of the day, so I know what I can do next morning. Because I'll come in and I'll be all over the map, right? Mm-hmm. I'll be like, oh, I have to do this. Maybe I should do this. Maybe I should do that. And if I'm not structured like that, I never realized that about myself, about how much I really need that. And it's something that I've warned people about who are kind of taking on the home business type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. When you don't have a schedule, when you don't have your type of, what am I going to do tomorrow? Kind of that deep work type of, this is scheduled. I'm going to do my deep work here. I'm going to do this here. I got to a point where I was scheduling from 11 to 12:30 because I have so many podcasting, scheduling things. I would put in 11 to 12:30. I blocked it out. I wrote nap, lunch, walk, right? So I wanted to see that every day to remind myself, hey, you got to take your nap around this time, and no one's going to call me for podcasts. I know it's not on there because my Calendly, my scheduling app isn't going to allow it, right? So they won't see that 11 to 12:30. They won't know I'm taking a nap, but they know they can't schedule a time in there. So that was a big thing for me, is like, wow, I'm out in this ocean here. I'm just swimming. What am I doing? And that took adjusting. And I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought I was a little bit more disciplined than that, but I'm not.
So tell the listener about your book. You just released a book, and I'm sure you're quite proud of anybody who's actually written a book, has to be proud of the accomplishment. So what is Like the Best about, and what's your mission within the context of that?
Yeah, Be Like the Best came about for me. When I was transitioning from gym owner to fitness education provider, I had my website, so setting that up, and I knew I needed a lead magnet, which is basically a lead magnet is something that I'm going to offer you for in exchange for your email address. So I thought, okay, what do people know me for? They know me for audio interviews, and what is something that I can do in line with my mission that I haven't done already, or I don't do twice a month on the Strength Coach Podcast, which is the X's and O's of the business. But what's my mission? To help fitness professionals become successful and make an impact in the world. So I'm going to do 5 interviews on success. So I picked 5 people that I thought represented a good, diverse group of the industry, interviewed them, and thought, wow, this would be a good PDF. And then I thought, holy cow, this would be a good book. And then what comes into your head? The resistance, right? Stephen Pressfield wrote the book, Do the Work and the War of Art. And it's the resistance. It's those self-limiting beliefs in your head that are saying, you're not an author. Nobody cares. You're the guy behind the guy. Tim Ferriss did this type of book already, an interview type of book. And then I had to battle that. And I said, no, this is for my people. And this is going back. This is why knowing your mission, knowing your purpose is so important. It answers a lot of the questions for you. I said, no, I need to help the fitness professionals. I need to make something a little bit more simpler. And I need to let them have that spark that, you know, that Daniel Coyle talked about in the Talent Code, that spark that people see themselves, right? The fitness professionals can see the successful person and say, that's like me. I can do that. I'm a fitness professional too. He started out in a gym or with a team, and I can do it. And so that's where it started. I called 45 more people and said, hey, I got a book coming out on success in the fitness industry. That's what it was called. And I knew I needed some kind of a more of a hook, but so it was interviews with 50 people on success. And I thought, I'll distill some of the through line, right? The common thread, and that'll be kind of some chapters that I add. But what happened was, when I was reading Mike's first, you know, Mike was one of the first ones that I did, I thought, this should be kind of cool. I should tell people to, Mike had said, I attribute speaking and writing. I attribute all that speaking and writing. That's where I got my success. That was the platform. That was the stepping stone. And I thought, well, they should be like Mike, you know, and I thought that would probably be kind of cool to, you know, write some kind of action step, because I don't think there's enough of that in books, is these specific action steps. Let me do an action step right after that interview based on one takeaway from that interview. And that's what the Be Likes are. So there's what I call a Be Like. It's just a challenge or action step based on one takeaway in the interview. So it's a Be Like Mike. And we kind of give you strategies to start writing and to start speaking. And so there's Be Likes after each interview. So that's where that whole thing kind of came from. It was just really came from, you know, you never know where they're going to come from, right? These ideas, but it came from the website lead magnet. And I thought, this would probably be a pretty good book. And it's in line with my mission and my brand. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to do this. And so I called Laurie Draper and said, hey, here's what I had in mind. And she's like, oh my God, I love that idea. And she took it on at On Target Publications. And so now I got a mini franchise, because there's going to be a couple You know, I did a workbook as well, so you can write in it. So there's two, you know, Be Like the Best, Be Like the Best workbook, and I have Be Like the Best Gyms that is going to be coming up. And so a couple more too. So it'll be fun, and I know it'll help people. And that's where, and you got me thinking about this recently on Facebook, is like, how do you know you accomplished your mission or your purpose, right? Mm. So that made me start to think as well. And this is something that, with the book, even though I didn't sell 50,000 copies, the feedback from people that I don't even know that are saying, oh my God, I love this book. I'm doing the action steps. And usually it takes me a little time. I'm thank you so much. And that's what got me to originally start to move away from the gym, was all these people talking about the Strength Coach podcast. I watched all the Strength Coach TVs before I opened my gym. Thank you so much. And that was what's really kind of pushed it for me. It didn't matter how many that I don't have Joe Rogan's numbers on the podcast, right? Mm. It mattered that I'm still getting those messages. People are still saying, hey, thank you for doing the podcast. And that's what I want to say to your listeners is, if you're listening to the show, send Scott a note, or even better, write a review on iTunes. People, get on iTunes and write him a review. Because, you know, I can't tell you, I've had thousands of people email me how great the podcast is. I think I have 40 reviews on iTunes. Mm. Like, don't tell me, tell iTunes. Damn it. And same thing with the book. I've gotten so many people already saying, oh my God, this book is, I love it. This is such a great idea. Thank you for doing this. Hey, go on Amazon and tell them. Don't tell me. No, I do. Please tell me. Please tell me.
Good, John good Brody, for you.
John Brody actually talked about that on our podcast, was that he said, you know, even as a mentor, like the mentor wants something in exchange. They want you to say, thank you for doing this, or this is the result of our conversations, or you know, your leadership, your guidance. So, yeah, we want that. So go on iTunes, people. Go to Leave Your Mark podcast and leave a review.
Thank you, sir. That's very nice. I will wrap this up with one last question. And that is, you know, there's people in the fitness industry or the performance industry who are struggling with their career and saying, do I really want to do this? And maybe I could change to something else, but they're intimidated by the scope of that change and the fact that, you know, they put all this energy into their profession, et cetera. And then there's people like yourself who are in some other industry or who are thinking about getting into the fitness industry. And I'm just interested in your one piece of advice about taking that leap of faith to change and listening to your inner spirit around that.
Yeah, I would say be intentional. And by that, I mean, sit down and start to figure out, write down what you feel like your mission, what you want your mission to be. What is your legacy? What do you want people to remember you for? So Michael Hyatt and Daniel Harkavy wrote a book called Living Forward, and they go through the process of writing out your own eulogy. Hmm. It's an important piece. That's where we start, because that will answer a lot of questions for you. It will answer, and then you put down, maybe get Tony Hsieh's book, Delivering Happiness. So it'll give you a good idea about your core values, or get Be Like the Best, because we go over both of those. And then write down your goals. Be intentional. Sit down. Take that time, because once you figure out your mission and purpose and you understand about a little bit more about your core values and maybe your priorities in life, what are those? Have you thought about them? Your goals will start to reflect some of those things. Mm. And by doing that, by figuring out maybe also, what do you want your life to look like? Where do you want to live? Who is it you want to live with? What kind of cars do you want? What do you want? A pool? Do you want a vacation home? Do you want to live in a shack, a tent, a tiny home? Who cares? But what is it? Like, start to write out what that vision is. So for me, it's about be intentional before you make that move. What is it that you really want to do? And then that will start to guide you. So I think before you're making that change, you should do that to really get a better understanding of yourself. And I think that'll help you moving towards where you want to be.
Awesome. Sir, it's been a pleasure to spend over an hour with you. It's time flies as you're having fun. So I hope you didn't have to be anywhere at 12:05, but
no,
thanks for taking the time, Anthony. And where can people find you? I know obviously strengthcoach.com, et cetera, but are there other places that they can light up with Anthony Renna?
Sure. Yeah. You can go to continuefit.com. It's really where I keep all my resources, where Be Like the Best is located and some other resources about that. But continuefit.com is my main website. Continue as in continuing education. That's the company that I started for once I left the, once I got out of the gym business. So, but yeah, that's the best place to find.
Cool. Well, thanks for taking the time, my friend. Nice to
be with you. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Have a good day.
Thanks for joining us today on Leave Your Mark. I hope we've left a mark on you today, and we wish only that you pay it forward by sharing this story, taking the time to rate and comment on this podcast. Please follow us at Twitter at Built by Scott and Instagram at King O'Pain, and become a member of this community at Scott G. Livingston on Facebook. Have a great day. Music by Cedric de Saint-Rome.